You are Locked On Saints, your daily New Orleans Saints podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is good, Houdat Nation and Houdat family? Welcome into our Analytics Tuesday episode here at Locked On Saints, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day, here every single Monday through Friday, 5 days a week, covering your New Orleans Saints. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day. No matter how you watch this season, Pepsi is the refreshment that you need to power through game day and become a member of the league of football watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. On today's episode, we'll start off with Coach Payton's media availability from his Monday conference call with New Orleans media, where he continued his transparent 2020 by sharing his thoughts on standout wide receiver Marquez Callaway and the struggles of the secondary, where he was far less positive. Then we'll update the ongoing Michael Thomas saga. Pro Football Talk just can't keep the Saints out their mouths. And as cute as it is, I do need to take a moment to give you an update and let you know why you shouldn't be worried one bit. And finally, we'll take a look at some key analytics after Sunday's win. How good is the Saints offense? How bad is the Saints defense? Are there any silver linings in this struggling secondary? All that and more. As always, I'm your host, Ross Jackson, at Ross Jackson NOLA on Twitter, editor over at CanalStreetChronicles.com, and your Tuesday co-host on the National Locked On NFL. We got all that and a little bit of land yap for you on today's episode of Locked On Saints, your team every day. New Orleans Saints head coach Sean Payton met with media in a conference call on Tuesday to give some thoughts on standout wide receiver Marquez Callaway, but also talk a little bit about the concerns centering around the Saints defense, particularly on the secondary. That's our New Orleans Saints lead story of the day today with Ross Jackson of Locked On Saints. Let's start off over on the positive side. Coach Sean Payton asked about New Orleans Saints undrafted free agent wide receiver out of Tennessee, Marquez Callaway, who had 8 catches and 75 yards in his expanded role against the Carolina Panthers on Sunday. Here's what Coach Payton had to say about the young wideout.
Look, he played well, and I've been real pleased. We've been pleased with his progress. Normally, you all might have had a chance to see him prior to the start of the season in some of the preseason games, but we felt like he had a good training camp. You know, he opened eyes. You know, we got a chance to see him explosively on some plays, and you know, it's great to see someone's progress, especially a first-year player in this season. And so it's encouraging, and we'll continue to build on that.
Very glad to hear the young guy drawing some praise there from head coach Sean Payton over the last couple of weeks. Coach Payton, as well as Saints quarterback Drew Brees, both have been very complimentary of Callaway's ability to learn this offense and show progress as quickly as he's been able to. And as Coach Payton mentioned, especially during the time of this COVID-stricken offseason that was shortened, no preseason, any time to really get out there and develop on the field. And so far, Callaway's found a way to do it in the film room, as well as making good on the opportunities that he gets out on the field, which are sure to only continue to expand so far throughout this season with what he has shown so far. But unfortunately, Coach Payton's conference call wasn't all positive in terms of tone. Here's what he had to say when he was asked about the secondary and whether or not miscommunication was the issue with some of the busted coverages.
Well, it wasn't as much communication this time as technique and landmarks. Obviously, something we've got to get cleaned up. Dennis and I just finished talking about a handful of them, and this wasn't as much communication as it was just recognizing the formation, the alignments, and then, you know, how to play the coverage on that specific play. So it's an area of concern. It's, you know, an area that we've got to get better at, and I think we will, but it's still something. It's one of those things, you come off a win and you look, all right, the good news is we won. Here are some of the things now that they're going to cost us in another game down the road if we don't fix.
If you look at what the usual statistic is for 20 plus yard plays being defined as explosive plays, the Saints have actually given up the third fewest amount of 20 plus yard plays over on the defensive side when it comes to the passing defense alone. That's 17, which actually sounds like a lot, but it's actually the third lowest total across the NFL defenses in the passing game. 15 allowed by the Ravens, a couple of teams tied at 16, and then the Saints, as well as a few other teams, tied at 17. But it's when you expand the scope to 40 plus yard plays where the Saints actually have the second highest total over on that side, the Seahawks with 7, and then the Washington football team, the Minnesota Vikings, the Dallas Cowboys, and the New Orleans Saints all in second place with the second most at 6. So it makes sense why you would still talk about the explosive plays, even though they may have the third lowest total when it comes to 20 plus yards. They're the second highest when it comes to 40 plus yards. And one more clip here for you, as Coach Payton was asked once more about the secondary. And here's where he shows some major concern for the status of this secondary unit for the New Orleans Saints.
It's closer to the a lot than not that concerned about it. I think it has to be. And that's something we'll continue to work on. But yeah, we've got to eliminate the explosives, you know, and look, teams are good enough throwing the football where they're going to make plays underneath. But in a handful of these games this year, you know, these chunk plays are the ones that, like I said earlier, are going to hurt you in another game and be the difference rather than, you know, you being able to overcome it.
So Coach Payton continues to be transparent when he is seeing issues with this team. And honestly, I think it's for the better. If you can be transparent, if you can say these are the issues that we're having, these are the players that we're having issues with. He even went so far as to respond to Nick Underhill when he asked about why players in the secondary who have been here for years were blowing coverages and doing things that they hadn't been doing before, making mistakes they hadn't been doing before. He even responded to Nick by telling him that that's a $6 million question. Meanwhile, Marcus Williams is sitting there on a 4-year, $6.2 million deal. So, I mean, look, take it for what you will, but I think that Coach Payton has continued to be transparent. He's continued to be an open book a bit about when it is that he's not feeling confident about this team. You remember the stare down that he gave somebody off camera at one point during a post-game presser. You remember the Larry Warford fiasco at the beginning of the season. Coach Payton has let you know when he has not been pleased with this team, and right now he is not at all pleased with the secondary, and honestly, who can blame him? Who can blame him? I'll tell you what I've not been pleased about. I have not been pleased at all about the way that PFT just won't leave the New Orleans Saints alone. So we'll get into their stories as well as a bit of an update to let you know why you shouldn't be concerned about Michael Thomas and the New Orleans Saints at all. We got that coming up for you next. You're on Locked On Saints, your team every day. But before we get to that, of course, this season will be different, and Pepsi's here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. I'm very excited for the trade deadline coming up. Sean Payton's concerned about the secondary. There might be some ways for him to fix it, so I'm excited for any potential movement that might be going on. And Pepsi is a refreshment that you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. I've spent a lot of time talking a bit about how it is the Saints can fix up their defense, but there's no question about where it is that you need to go if you need to fix up your vehicle. It's rockauto.com. They have changed the game when it comes to shopping for car auto parts, because they have made it so incredibly easy. The user interface is super friendly. You just go in, you pick your make, pick your model, pick your year, and then everything after that is like a guided tour through improvements of your personal vehicle and garage. It is perfect. Go and check them out, rockauto.com. You need a new windshield wiper, you need new windshield wiper blades, you need a new set of brakes, some floor mats, some oil, whatever it is that you need, they have you covered. Go and check them out, rockauto.com. They're a family business. They've been helping online customers for over 20 years, and now they're ready to help you. Don't forget to let them know that Locked On sent you by writing Locked On in the How'd You Hear About Us section. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. All right, Huda Nation, it's Locked On Saints here with you every single Monday through Friday. Whether this is your first time or your next time catching a show, I so appreciate y'all being here and rocking with us, as the Saints have now improved to 4-2, and there's so much excitement laying ahead as the Saints could potentially be getting back, you know, Michael Thomas within the next, I'll say, couple of weeks. Same thing with Emmanuel Sanders. I do think that we have to be aware of the fact that potentially both of these players could miss next week's game. Michael Thomas with a hamstring injury that was diagnosed, according to Jay Glazer, as a grade 1 hamstring strain. So that's usually a 1 to 2 week type of miss. So there's a potential that he could be out for this week 8 game against the Chicago Bears. As for Emmanuel Sanders, he was put on the COVID-19 reserve list, symptomatic, meaning that he was going to have to be out for 10 days and then also test positive twice after that. So that could put him back in time to play on Sunday, but certainly wouldn't get him back on time to practice at all leading into the game. So I do think we have to remain realistic. There's a potential that both of these players might not end up playing, but obviously, as we've seen, that's kind of okay because the Saints all of a sudden have depth at the wide receiver position that they're comfortable with. We saw on the Monday night football game against the Los Angeles Rams that an effective run game can be used to neutralize that Chicago Bears defense. We saw the Saints do exactly that last year when they had to travel to Chicago without Drew Brees, without Jared Cook, and without Alvin Kamara, and that worked just fine as Latavius Murray went for over 100 yards on him. So there's a couple of different ways that you can look at this, but we have to remain realistic about what it could mean for Michael Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. But we should be aware when other people are not living in the same reality that we are living in, such as Mike Florio and the ProFootballTalk.com, whatever they are. This was something that stretched over the entire bye week and something that they had kind of been leaning in on and doubling down on even earlier on in the season. But Mike Florio, PFT, taking the strong stance that the New Orleans Saints, the first story was that the New Orleans Saints were looking to trade Michael Thomas and that the situation had deteriorated between them and the relationship had deteriorated after the altercation with CJ Gardner-Johnson, which, as we told you many times, I've talked to players within the organization, trainers, staff members. There, many of us have talked to many players and people around the organization, and we felt comfortable that the Saints had put this behind them. Mike Florio, PFT, those guys continued to push the narrative. Okay, that eventually slowed down. Then all of a sudden came some rumors that the Saints were looking to trade Michael Thomas, and Coach Payton went so far as to comment on that post itself. It was a Saturday splash report, basically, saying that, look, the outsiders that you're talking about are on the insiders that you're referencing, the NFL insiders that are saying that the Saints were open to shopping Michael Thomas maybe at some time if the price was possibly right and they really liked it, maybe, like that type of quote-unquote reporting. And Sean Payton basically said those insiders are on the outside exactly where they belong. And that, I thought, was going to dead the whole situation. When you, as a viable news source and a viable reporting source that are trying to be, I would imagine, hold on to some integrity within your journalistic approach, when the head coach of the team that you're talking about calls you out, usually you stop. But no, not PFT. Then the narrative changed to that it was Michael Thomas that was pushing and his camp were pushing for a trade and that they were maybe trying to get the star traded if they could possibly, maybe reportedly at some time, make this happen if the price was right. And it was always that type of language, hedging their bets over and over and over and over again every single time. And, you look at Michael Thomas's tweets before the game. Looking forward to watching Mahomes ball out. He was doing shout outs to Alvin Kamara before the game. He told Marquez Callaway just a couple of days ago before he went out there to play his first game to go out there and ball out. He has been such a team guy throughout all of this, despite being benched, despite the injury. People are really trying to make this injury and series of injuries and series of events that have been unfortunate, don't get me wrong, hope you catch the reference, but they're trying to make it into something that it's not. And this is exactly what happened with Alvin Kamara at the beginning of the season, where the Saints, maybe were considering trading Alvin Kamara if the price was right and if they couldn't reach a long-term deal, which is like, duh, of course they would if that were the case. This isn't necessarily the same thing to where it's a duh, of course it would, but it's certainly the same thing to where it is a news source that's trying to make something out of absolute nothing. Now, if Michael Thomas were to end up getting moved in a couple of seasons after all of the salary cap dues are paid and the guaranteed money is out of the way, fine. Like, that's something that if that report came out, then I could see some potential weight and validity to it. But at this point, when you're talking about mad dead money, you're talking about a contract that no team is going to want to pick up, and you're talking about a player and a team that still have a strong relationship? No, absolutely not. This is a ridiculous thing that people are using. PFT went so far as to pin the article to their Twitter page to make sure that it got as much traction as possible. This is an attention grab. And so they end up putting out another report saying that Michael Thomas may be looking to get traded and his camp is looking at the possibility of possibly being traded. but it's probably not going to happen before the trade deadline. And so it's probably not going to happen. And it's like, then why are you even reporting this? And they went so far as Sunday night before the Sunday night game to make a segment out of this on the pregame show on NBC, PFT, NBC, of course, the same thing. But they even went so far as to hold a whole pregame show about this, or a whole segment in the pregame show about this, to where, again, they made the report and then hedged their bets over and over again, ending the report by saying, but it's probably not going to happen. So what's the point? What is the point of telling me, hey, this thing that's totally not going to happen might could have happened sometime, maybe someday? Like, can you click on my article, please? Like, it's just too much. It's too much. So look, there's no reason for you to be concerned about this. This is another example of just PFT doing their thing. And I've mentioned here on the show before, I have not been shy about it. If you see a report by PFT, wait for it to be corroborated or confirmed by somebody creditable. Don't waste your time if it's just a PFT report. Do not worry about it. So my thing is, there's nothing to see here. Michael Thomas is going to get back on that field as quickly as he can and as safely as he can. Sean Payton, Michael Thomas, they want him back on the field. We've seen that over and over again. Again, remember, when they made the decision to bench Michael Thomas, they were doing a disciplinary act because of something that happened at practice, but they chose not to suspend him as to not jeopardize his guaranteed money with the team. There's a mutual respect here that still remains, and there is a cognizance and a sensitivity to one another that is still there and that is still intact, and that is very, very, very important. And even Jay Glazer himself said, this is a situation and in a relationship that is being mended and that they're ready to move ahead. So I would rather stick with Jay Glazer than worry about Mike Florio and the PFT folks. So just know, nothing to be concerned about, at least at this time, unless things were to turn completely sideways or upside down at some point before Michael Thomas hits the field again. But I assume that as soon as Michael Thomas hits the field, all will be well and there will be no more of this ridiculous conversation. So that's where I am. That's where you need to be. Don't worry about it. Everything's fine. PFT gonna PFT. Don't pay him no mind. All right, coming up next, we're gonna dive into our final segment. It is our Analytics Tuesday. So we're looking at some key analytics. How good has the Saints offense been? How bad has the Saints defense been? And is there any silver lining, anything at all to look forward to when it comes to the secondary? We have it coming up for you next here on Locked On Saints, your team every day. All right, Huda Nation, jumping into our final segment here for today's episode of Locked On Saints, brought to you by Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. No hedging here, all substance. We're all about trying to give you the facts and the information that you need. So let's go ahead and dive into it, particularly here on our Analytics Tuesday. We always like to take a look at the percentages, the numbers. What are the numbers telling us before we dive into the film tomorrow? So let's go ahead and start with personnel groups. You know how much I love personnel groupings. Just a couple of things that I want to hit here. The Saints, very diverse in their personnel groupings in this game. Seven different personnel groupings in terms of the ones that are established by the NFL. 11 personnel, 12 personnel, 21 personnel, 10 personnel, as we've talked about. Remember, in those is a two-digit number. First digit means how many running backs are on the field. Second digit tells you how many tight ends are on the field. And then you fill out the rest of the five skill position spots accordingly, usually with wide receivers. Only 42% of this game did they play in 11 personnel, which is the most popular personnel group. And this is the three wide receiver set that uses a slot receiver. This is what you see for the most part across the NFL. The Saints, out of their 67 offensive snaps, ran 11 personnel only 28 times. And the thing that's major about this is that they saw a 63% successful run percentage out of this. This is usually a passing set. The Saints, 7.3 yards per carry when they ran against this. The reason why is because the Saints passed the ball so well that the Panthers had to respect when there were three receivers on the field, because any of those three guys could catch a pass in this game and any of those three guys could find their way open. There was a lot of separation created in the finding pockets in the zone. So they ended up lightening up the boxes. And so the Saints utilized those 11 personnel, and even sometimes they used 10 personnel a few times in this game as well, to where there were no tight ends, only one running back and four wide receivers. They actually did that six times. And out of that, they ended up running once. They actually got 4 yards out of that as well. So they would lighten up the box and they would run for these chunk yards. You also look at some of the heavier personnel packages, one running back with two tight ends. They ran the ball with an 88% success rate, averaging 6.1 yards on the ground. They also ran 12 personnel, two tight ends, one running back 11 times. They ran four times out of that, 50% success rate, 5.8 yards on the ground. So they did a really good job mixing and matching, again, diversifying their offense on the personnel group, but also diversifying the usage when they were there in terms of making sure that they both ran the ball and passed the ball out of those situations successfully. The Saints ended up passing the ball on early downs a little bit more. They've now moved into 12th in the NFL in terms of early down pass frequency, not including the 2 minutes from each half and not including garbage time. And so, you know, the Saints throwing the ball a little bit more often early on in drives, but finding success doing it. So if they're going to find success doing it, why not? And they're not abandoning the run game at all. They've been done a good job sticking with it, making sure that they're churning away and chipping away at these defenses in order to do that. So now we can take a look at some of the EPA. This is expected plays along the average there per play. So when you look at how efficient this team is and how successful they are, you can use this metric to measure it. Right now, the Saints 12th in overall EPA per play. If you look at their drop back EPA, which is how successful they are in the passing game per play, then that one ends up taking them down to 15th, but still pretty good. I mean, they're averaging over a tenth of a point per play, and they're nearly at 2/10. That's about where you want to be. Then you look at the rush EPA, where the Saints are a little bit more successful at 13th, at the 13th in the NFL there. Now, one of the other things to take a look at is going to be success rate. This is another one that we'd like to look at. What is the percentage of successful plays in the run game, percentage of successful plays in the passing game? Right now in the run game, the Saints are fourth best in the NFL with 46% success on the ground in terms of their run play, their run success rate. You can look at their dropback success rate to measure that metric in terms of the passing game, 49.8%, 17th in the NFL. Not so great there, but overall success rate, they're near the top 10 at 11th in the NFL. Now, unfortunately, over on the defensive side, you already kind of know where we're going here. So we'll start off with the good news. In terms of rush EPA over on the defensive side for this team, they've done a good job there. They're 12th in the NFL there. And then in terms of allowed success rate on the ground, they're 16th. But then you start to get to some of these other metrics when you look at the dropback EPA. Right now, the Saints 29th in the NFL there, and then overall EPA per play 28th. So they're allowing a lot of success, and they're allowing a lot of quote unquote points per play in terms of how successful those plays are for other offenses. They've not done a good job limiting that so far this season. So the overall takeaway here is that Saints on offense, good. Saints on defense, bad. That's pretty much what I can give you. The silver lining to the Saints secondary right now, yes, there is one. And it's Janoris Jenkins, man. Janoris Jenkins has had an absolutely outstanding season so far. He came back in this game and performed extremely well. One catch for 4 yards for Janoris Jenkins. So far on the season, in terms of his passer rating that he's allowed only a 58 passer rating so far this season. And he's allowed only 142 yards on 14 receptions and only a 58.3 reception percentage when targeted as well. So he's really your silver lining across the secondary. You did get a better performance from Marshon Lattimore in this game, but as of right now, he finally dropped away. He's no longer allowing a perfect passer rating when targeted so far this season, but he's still allowing a 155.9 passer rating. So, you know, you still want to see him get a little bit better, but hey, 85.4 passer rating when targeted in this last game, allowed 3 catches on 4 targets for only 20 yards, a much better day for Marshon Lattimore, and we should not by any means ignore that. The last thing that I want to take a look at, the pass rush win rates and the run block win rates and run stop win rates aren't updated by ESPN yet, but we can take a look over on the offensive line real quick at how many pressures they allowed according to Pro Football Focus. I know we're not looking at grades, but we can look at these numbers. The Saints allowed only 4 pressures in this game. 4 pressures. That includes 1 sack that ended up being a sack fumble, of course, so you don't want to do that, but they allowed only 4 pressures in this game. 1 by Ryan Ramczyk, 1 by Andrus Peat, 1 by James Hurst, which was that sack fumble, and then 1 by Teron Armstead. The good news is that there was the 1 sack, and then after that, no other defender for the Panthers laid a hand on Drew Brees. So the Saints offensive line played very, very well. The Saints defensive line also played well. They got 12 pressures on this one, but unfortunately only the 1 sack. So you want to see them convert more of those pressures to sacks. But if they can continue to get consistent pressure and find any way to make the opposing quarterback uncomfortable, which didn't really happen in this game, you felt like you were getting pressure, they were getting pressure, but the pressure on the quarterback wasn't necessarily there and adding up and translating into, you know,
uncomfortable play or bad decision making or anything like that for Teddy Bridgewater, but that's just who Teddy Bridgewater is. They'll have a big test ahead of them, the Saints, next week against the Bears, where you want to definitely get pressure, and you can see it affect guys like Nick Foles or Mitch Trubisky, whoever ends up being the starting quarterback by that time for the Chicago Bears after another poor performance by Nick Foles on Monday Night Football. So, all right, y'all, that's going to do it for today's episode. Saints offense up, Saints defense down. That's what it is. But if you have any questions and you want to dig a little bit deeper, we have our mailbag tomorrow. So you can either hit me up at Ross Jackson, NOLA, at RossJacksonASC@gmail.com, or over on the Locked On Saints Facebook group. Let me know what questions you have. We'll get those answered. And we'll also do a film breakdown for the three most impactful plays, or three of the most impactful plays from Sunday's win, 27-24 for the New Orleans Saints. They improved to 4-2 and second in the NFC South. But for right now, it's going to do it for today's episode. I appreciate y'all as always for being here. Once again, I'm Ross Jackson. You can follow me on Twitter at Ross Jackson, NOLA. Hit me up. Let me know how the family's doing. Let me know how you're living. Let me know how your mom and them. Tell your friends, family, and fellow Saints fans about the show. And if you haven't already, please take a moment to subscribe. Drop that 5-star rating and review. I thank you so much for all your support and for helping me grow this family. This has been Locked On Saints, and trust Hootat Nation. I'll holla at you.